Okay, today is May 13th, 2009, and I'm here in Skopje, Macedonia with Giorgio Buttini. Giorgio, thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
I was wondering if we could start, maybe you could just describe your background with policing issues here in Macedonia, because as I gather it, you have quite a bit of experience in the country.
I'm a professional police officer at the state police in Italy. My rank is equivalent to lieutenant colonel. I started my experience in the country back in 2003 during the Italian presidency in Brussels, when the issue of taking over the EU military mission Concordia with an EU police mission, so switching from within the second pillar, switching from military tool to civilian tools, came up. So in Brussels, there was the decision to set up a planning team, which was quite limited, composed of seven experts from the different member states, which started working in Brussels first and then deployed in Skopje. As a result of the planning team activity, Proxima was launched on December 15, 2003, with an authorized strength of 180 police officers under deployment in the former crisis area and Skopje. Later, since the joint action had authorized only 1 year mission with possible extension, there was an extension of the mission with countrywide deployment. So the deployment of Proxima 2, 2004-2005, was extended to all the country, not only to the former crisis area. The mandate of the mission was, a standard one. To monitor, mentor, and advise local police officers to bring up police standards up to the international ones. I would say that the panorama of the international organizations and the situations I found here was, extremely interesting and challenging from, a theoretical point of view, because I also train this specific topic at CIPOLA, the European Police Academy. There is a course on crisis management to people at my level, prospective candidates for key positions in new missions. So, and I use always the example of Macedonia as one of the best ones, because there has been a crisis, then first military tool under the second pillar, previously even a NATO tool with Essential Harvest, then Concordia. Then within the CONOPS authorized and in Brussels, there was already the idea to switch from a military tool within the second pillar to the civilian one. So there was the switch from a military to civilian tool under the second pillar. In between, the European Commission was already here. A bit before the set off of the crisis, and had already started moving the first steps towards the creation of an overarching policy for the police reform. And in 2002, I think, a European Commission Justice and Home Affairs team was sent here to help the authorities to draft the police reform strategy. And the team was made up of experts drawn from member states, from the Commission, the Council, as usual, so to cover all the different aspects. Also because the European Union police missions are, yes, under the second pillar, but for the budgetary, related issues are, let's say, follow the rules of the commission. So there is always in the fact-finding missions, in the missions, there is always an expert of the commission looking after this kind of issues. So let's say the commission had already started, let's say, helping the local authorities under the always the polar star of local ownership, which means local authorities must absolutely be fully involved and take more and more the ownership of the product, of the reform. So let's say there was the European Commission, let's say, taking the long-term perspective, because the police reform strategy, it is clear, it is always like this, takes a time frame which, depending on the local situation, can be 3 to 5, 6, 7 years, depending on, let's say, the situation, but this is the frame. While the council under the second pillar was, let's say, addressing the immediate needs of the local police, first year in the former crisis area, second year countrywide, to bring up local standards of policing to, let's say, intermediate ones. But at the same time, there was also, let's say, the presence of OSCE spillover mission here in Skopje, dealing with, let's say, training or providing, at the very beginning, training directly, then providing train the trainers activity at the police academy, then looking after also the premises of the police academy in Idrizovo. Inside this, there was also, let's say, a presence of the U.S. Embassy here, let's say, providing support in, let's say, many different aspects. But I would say that at the very beginning I saw a lot of interest, currently so, in internal control, start shaping some kind of units also to, let's say, to have a link with confidence building, mm-hmm. a link with, let's say, and with the ethnicity, multi-ethnicity fashion of the new police service. So internal control, community policing, and also, let's say, start, let's say, following a bit the nascent organization of the central police services here at the Ministry of Interior in some selected areas to start tackling more efficiently organized crime. And then there were also other embassies involved, like of the member states or European countries, but not, let's say, belonging to the European Union, ranging from Norway to UK, France, just to mention the most active ones. Turkey, a bit later, but also Switzerland also was, let's say, active. So, let's say, all these, let's say, international organizations here, not to mention International Organization for Migration, UNHCR, let's say, a lot of people involved more or less in policing. The massive presence of all these organizations here were, let's say, an ideal, let's say, situation to where to, let's say, also develop a way of, let's say, addressing a post-crisis situation, mm-hmm. because the coordination is always, let's say, among international organizations is always, let's say, requested. It is always wished, but not very often is, let's say, achieved at a practical level. Although the efforts in this regards are always very much, let's say, made, and in this regard, opening a small, let's say, parenthesis, I would say that it is really, let's say, impressive how much, let's say, in a post-crisis situation, all the international organizations' representatives, at least in my field of experience, mm-hmm. are open and transparent to each other. So if you ask something, an information or a meeting or what you are doing, what kind of funding are you providing, for which, for who, whatever, there is always the highest degree of openness.
In the course of your experience here, have there been organized coordinative bodies.
Yes, there have been. Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. For instance, Proxima, the first year of Proxima, the European Commission delegation, because at that time the European Commission delegation and the European Union Special Representative were not united as it is now, with a double-headed situation where, let's say, two representatives. Anyway, the European Commission delegation, which was, as mentioned before, following and triggering the police reform strategy in the long term, promoted the so-called police expert group meeting, which was a meeting taking place, I think, every week or so. I don't remember. And the idea was to get together all the EU actors in the field, at least. So, which means the European Commission, USR, Proxima, and some EU-funded projects already here, to get them together and to coordinate by, let's say, knowing who was doing what. And there was also, let's say, very often there was invitation of some leading figures of the Ministry of Interior dealing with a specific aspect of either the police reform strategy or something, invited in the second part of the meeting to discuss, let's say, directly issues of a technical level, not a political one. This was, was a normal attempt, to coordinate efforts among the EU family. Nonetheless, there were, always. I remember during the planning phase of Proxima, but also after regular meetings with OSCE, for instance, with the U.S. Embassy, ICTAP. There were more or less regular meetings. In this regard, there is, the good faith of trying. The problem is that sometimes what is lacking is the real overview of the situation. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, now that I have made experience in crisis management with the Council and United Nations in Kosovo, and now that I have the experience of the European Commission from policing point of view, which means also to a certain extent programming, I can see that the Commission has the vision, also according to the civilian headline goals, has really the vision of years, 3 to 5 years vision. So the Commission knows that it wants to invest money in selected areas, fields. Usually doesn't know exactly what are the real needs, how to, translate fields of where to invest into real projects. And sometimes there is a need to contract experts to come and go field to make an assessment and then to have a better idea where to invest. While EU missions, for instance, have usually the police officers deployed have really the insight of what are the, most pressing needs of the local police officers, but they have no idea how to address these needs. And I remember one of the biggest frustrations in Proxima was we know what they need, to address operational shortcomings in the next 6 months or 1 year. But we have no capacity of spending because the crisis management is like this. We have very limited capacity of spending. There is possibility to fund 1 or 2 days seminar, to fund some limited, but very limited in budget projects. Yeah. But there is no capacity to buy equipment.
So was that because the money wasn't there, or because the money hadn't been directed to?
Because the money for upgrading the system of the police in terms of equipment, logistics, training in long term, specialized training, are allocated within the commission, which follows rules which are quite, let's say, strict. While the crisis management hand of the European Union has a direct, let's say, access to local and field needs, but doesn't have, due to its, let's say, quite response nature, the capacity to spend. So, let's say, the issue is how to make these two hands get together and know each other. And let's say that from UPM in Bosnia, which was the first EU mission launched under Proxima, a great deal of experience has been made in this regard by the European Union, and I would say that there is now much more, let's say, knowledge and understanding that these two components of this, the let's say, the overall EU policy must be, let's say, getting together. But this is so true that if, let's say, we see in the civilian headline goals 2008 of the European Union, there is the one of the of the wishes, but also one of the requirements is that the instruments of the Commission must always be, let's say, coordinated with the instruments of the crisis management tool, second pillar, in order to have a let's say, a coordinated approach to a crisis. This makes sense, of course. But also the European Union has had to learn from its own experiences. So let's say, I think that all in all, here was not, let's say, bad at all. I think that could have been better, but you know, it is not always possible. So
can you think of, does any particular episode come to mind where the people who had tactical operational knowledge identified a need, but couldn't, that need couldn't, the funding couldn't be found for that, or it was just
I don't remember specific, let's say, things, but I do remember, for example, that when we started, let's say, discussing the necessity to have a law on police, setting the organization staffing level and, let's say, principles of the Bureau for Public Security here, which is under the Ministry of Interior, along with the Bureau for Counterintelligence. There were a lot of discussions, experts, drafts from the local authorities, and in late 2004, beginning of 2005, I don't remember exactly, there was a request from the European Commission to provide inputs to the draft, let's say, made by the local authorities. So let's say we had a section of international legal advisor, including local legal advisor, and we worked on this along with the European Commission, with Proxima. So this was, let's say, very good. So European Commission, knowing that had at that time limited capacity from legal point of view to comment the law, also asked the Proxima mission, which had, let's say, a legal component to provide the support. So I remember this because what the law was and is very much important. And for us, Proxima, it took us, let's say, quite a lot of resources to address this request from the European Commission delegation. You know, the issue was, at that time here, the European Commission delegation had not, until last year, December 31st, had not, let's say, operational capacity in programming, because here there was the European Agency for Reconstruction, which was leading the operational capacity of, let's say, programming, funding, and checking, along with the local authorities, and, let's say, in the framework of the multi-annual planning indicators of the European Commission, what to buy. So let's say the European Agency for Reconstruction was, let's say, according to its status, an independent agency. So there was, of course, a close liaison with the Commission here, but I do remember that the program managers of the European Agency for Reconstruction were, let's say, calling us in specific areas, especially the program department to which I belonged, to come and share our, let's say, technical findings with them in order to find and to tailor-made as much as possible the programming of the agency towards the local authorities. I do remember several meetings with the program managers. So this was another actor, let's say, working here.
So in terms of this police experts group that you mentioned, how long did that stay in place for? Is it still in place? Is there a version of it?
No, because first of all, we had the personal reunion of USR and the Commission back in 2005, I think. Yes, I think, late 2005. When Ambassador Fouré arrived, he was already, let's say, double-hatted. Second of all, in December 2005, Proxima II ended, replaced by a 30-person small mission just to bridge the beginning of the European Commission-funded projects here. And fourth of all, there was no need because the European Commission had opened before the position of a police advisor for a national detached expert, to which I applied and let's say I was taken. And I was also, I think, taken due to my experience already developed in the ground. So let's say there was at a certain point here also the presence of the international community started, let's say, phasing down or scaling down a bit because, let's say, there was a process of streamlining also the number of the international organization. So in 2005, Proxima was no longer needed because it was invited by the local government. The European Commission had already, let's say, started through the European Agency for Reconstruction presence of projects monitoring the implementation or the development of the police reform, but projects funded by the European Commission, European Agency for Reconstruction, present here with no uniforms, no weapons, no cars with police fashion, whatever. So let's say there was already the program to switch again from civilian tools under the second pillar to projects financed and led under the first pillar commission. So also these police experts coordination meeting were no longer needed, also because the commission were taking more and more the lead of the police reform process towards the local authorities.
Mm-hmm. So There are several organizations working on police issues at the moment, such as OSCE, ISATAP. There's no formalized coordinated body at the moment that would manage those.
I would say that the formalization is in let's say the mandates of the organizations, so by default. On one hand. On another hand, there is, let's say, technical coordination among, I would say, at my level, with the police advisors or the head of, let's say, the unit in these international organizations dealing with police. Plus, at political level, there is the principal meeting. Or the head of mission meeting, where, let's say, issues of interest are commonly discussed weekly or bi-weekly. So there are, let's say, in the different layers, there are, let's say, coordination at political and technical level. And usually if there is an issue of interest for me or relevant for the police reform strategy, which is what I follow the most, I usually exchange immediately an email with the head of the police development unit here at OSCE, always, with now our EU-funded project on the police reform, with the police attaché at the US embassy. Sometimes, depending on the situation with the attaché at the UK and or France embassy, because they have been active in policing matters. And I see which way the wind is blowing. And if I see that there is an issue, let's say, I bring it up, which might have a political implication, I bring it up to the ambassador here. Okay. And maybe they will discuss it, let's say, commonly. And the same, more or less, do OSCE, US Embassy, so let's say there is this kind of, let's say, sharing of issues.
So it sounds as though coordination, it's not too much of a problem for you, you're finding?
No, because I told you, first of all, there is a very high degree of transparency.
Yeah.
Second of all, there are, let's say, no, also from human point of view, maybe I'm, let's say, lucky, but there are no, let's say, problems. So we share documents, we say, this can be, let's say, can have to stay, let's say, within you, there is no problem. And third of all, although we follow, let's say, partly different things, European Union, OSCE, another big player is the American Embassy, let's say, very much often is interesting for me to see if, let's say, the OSCE has the same interest in something, and if they see a political dimension of this, then if I see this, then I go to my ambassador and say there is this technical issue which might have a political dimension. I have already spoken with OSCE, US Embassy, whatever, and they see this from different from the same angle. So I say without, let's say, committing other people, I would expect that they will, let's say, inform at least their, let's say, political hierarchy. And this is a way for the ambassador to know that, let's say, at the principal meeting, there is a need or there is an interest in, let's say, opening a small discussion on one topic, which is relevant for us. But, let's say, the other, NATO or whatever, they do the same from their perspective.
Now, a large part of the story of policing here in Macedonia since 2001 is this idea of the redeployment of police into former crisis areas.
Yes.
And the joint patrols. Could you talk about a little bit about your experience or awareness of that process?
Yeah, when Proxima was deployed in December 2003, but let's say the real deployment started late January 2004. The police had already started re-entering villages of the former crisis area with OSCE, joint patrols. So it was a really big, let's say, enterprise of OSCE, let's say, accompanying police back to villages. At the same time, OSCE was, let's say, training. Making some crash training to ethnic Albanian police officers who were recruited, I think, 1,000 or 500, I don't remember, but quite a lot, and for a three-month course, if I'm not mistaken. And then they were, let's say, all deployed in the former crisis area as a confidence-building measure. We started, let's say, having, let's say, joint patrols with Proxima around February 2004, which is still Proxima 1, which means only deployment only in the former crisis area plus Skopje. And I do not remember, let's say, big problems, really, because police was already more or less allowed access to all the country. There were, let's say, no-go areas for the police. There were some areas where the police was a bit reluctant to enter we are speaking about 2004, the beginning of 2004, due to, let's say, the issue of the crisis and the need to, let's say, go slowly with the confidence building. But this was done mainly by OSCE. We were more, let's say, technical oriented for the police. Of course, when you address the issue of standard policing, and directly you address also the issue of confidence building, because a professional police officer is a police officer which builds confidence, mm-hmm. usually. But this, it is a more long-term approach. OSCE was more, let's say, the institutional figure, let's say, guaranteeing, let's say, the normal policing and the presence of the police in the former crisis area of the village.
Do you recall why OSCE was judged to be the appropriate body to carry this out?
I have no idea, honestly.
Now, you mentioned that even when Proxima was involved in these joint patrols, there were still some sensitive areas, mm-hmm. that redeployment. Do you recall, were there policies put in place to phase redeployment in, such as patrols in these areas being unarmed or being having a higher proportion of ethnic Albanians, or was it just a matter of police just didn't go there that often, as often as they went to other villages? But,
honestly, I do not remember, but for instance, I do remember the issue of Krasnichi in Kondovo. I do remember, let's say, in 2000, I think it was five, yes, his threats to bomb Skopje with mortars, and then the subsequent also action of the Minister of Interior. Kondovo was and is predominantly, or let's say exclusively, ethnic Albanian area. And in that case, I do remember that the police applied special care in, let's say, patrolling the area, not to, let's say, trigger an incident, let's say, not wanted. So the police, I remember that the police, for the majority of the time of the tense situation, was anyway getting across the village. Because also there was another international actor I forgot to mention, very much important, was a European Union monitoring mission, UMM, mostly drawn from military people, very much, let's say, important from, let's say, intelligence, human intelligence gathering, useful for, let's say, deciding the policing, the overall policing of the situation. Anyway.
So it's a face-saving measure for both sides?
Yes. Okay. But then, when the situation escalated, the Minister of Interior, at that time was SDSM Dewey government, took action, and a police operation, a complex one, was, let's say, carried out. There was, I think, one person killed, two arrested, one of whom was wounded quite seriously, reaffirming the authority of the state in the village.
So this idea that the police would make kind of a show of force in Kondovo without actually out of doing anything too great, were there international advisors in that police group that would drive through the village, or the international advisors stayed nearby, I think you said?
No, as far as I remember, they were staying, they were, let's say, usually in the village in Kondovo very often, mm-hmm. let's say basically every day. Mm-hmm. OSC also had, after this police operation, a small confidence building project, but this was after. But let's say the idea was to monitor carefully the situation and to prevent a possible unwanted by both sides incident. But this was used by both, let's say, actors. One, to reaffirm the the right under the commitment to patrol and to enter the city, and the other one not to have a police operation while the internationals were there. So it is a typical situation. Anyway, at a certain point, the issue, let's say, escalated to a level where the Ministry of Interior took action.
Now, and you mentioned that it was under Proxima 1 that these joint patrols happened. At this point, this is still Proxima 1. So this is joint patrols in the former conflict areas and in Skopje itself. Was that the entirety of Skopje, or was it the Albanian majority areas of the city?
No, it was, let's say, as far as I remember, it was the whole area. There were no, let's say, specific targets.
And just on the details of these joint patrols, would Proxima officers ride with the patrols in their cars, or was it two separate?
No, two separate cars.
Two separate cars. Yes. So there would be a Macedonian police force and then a Proxima car.
Yes.
And you mentioned briefly that after the Kondova incident, there was a small OSCE confidence building.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Honestly, I don't remember exactly what was the real aim of it, but I do remember that immediately after, as a, let's say, in order to diffuse tensions with the villagers, whatever, OSCE had a small project there. I think that maybe it was an infrastructural one to solve one small problem of the village, like piping or something, or waste disposal. I don't remember, but I think that it was something, let's say, infrastructural.
And by the point Proxima was involved in joint patrols, had the joint patrol model already been expanded to all of the former crisis areas, or was it still in the process of expansion?
Let's say the issue is that under Proxima 2, we changed a bit the approach of the mission. There was a change of approach, and we, let's say, switched to a more program-oriented approach in Proxima 2. This had started already in late Proxima 1. But in Proxima 2, we had a program-oriented approach, which means we developed, according to the mandate of the mission, a set of areas where we wanted to improve the standards of the police, and then for each program there are different actions.
Mm-hmm.
And there was let's say also the organization of the mission was with the program directors for each field and people leading the specific actions with milestones, the usual stuff. And we had a program in uniform police, organized crime, border police, I think internal control, yes, and maybe there was a fifth one, but I don't remember. And within uniform police, there was, for instance, monitoring, training, facilitating the international cooperation of the special units. So we are speaking about the rapid deployment unit, the one those headquartered in Gorje Petrov, and the special task unit. Special task unit is the one dealing with hostage taking and this kind of issues. Alpha units, let's say, came after, but they are let's say a floating issue, because the alpha units, underlined quite a lot to the local authorities, are out from the police reform strategy. So this is a body invented by Minister Mihailovski, to address a real need. It was a street criminality growing, especially in Skopje, also in the south part of Skopje, with a lot of armed robberies, burglaries. And the setup of this unit, curbed this street criminality wave in a very short period of time.
So this is a SWAT type unit, a tactical weapon?
They work in plain clothes, but with also machine guns, with civilian cars. They proven to be very effective, but the issue is that after the immediately after tackling the issue of this wave of robberies or whatever, they start being employed also for the execution of the national arrest warrants. Because as always happens, let's say local police, let's say policemen who were grown and deployed in the same area where, let's say, they have grown up, born, whatever, has some difficulties in executing some arrest warrants. So this unit was better paid, better trained, highly motivated, so they started executing the arrest, not only in the former crisis area, but I remember also in Prilep, where there was the issue of the Lions, so it was the paramilitary group of the Macedonians, some of whom had been incorporated in the police and some not. They were also protesting to be incorporated. But anyway, there was the necessity to arrest some people linked to these former Lions, a very, let's say, a group of people who are still in the mind of some Macedonians for their role in the crisis from the Macedonian side. And the Alpha Unit took the burden to arrest them, you know. So in Prilep, which is really, let's say, an area of, let's say, where from which a lot of former paramilitary people of Lions came from. So it was, but after, let's say, the international community started, let's say, receiving more and more complaints for excessive use of force
by the Alpha Unit.
Especially concerning the Roma people, and there were some cases, let's say, where there were some doubts were, let's say, raised about the professionalism, chain of command, training. So, which, let's say, the parabola of the Alpha Unit basically ended last year during the political elections, where during the first day of the political election, during the pre-electoral campaign and during the first day of the political elections, Alpha Units stationed headquarters in the former Gazis area, speaking about Tetovo and Gostivar, let's say, were considered, let's say, supporting one of a faction taking, let's say, active role in the political elections, favoring, sometimes making intimidation threats. As a result of this, Minister of Interior Jan Kuloska decided to temporarily disband all of the Alpha units, except the one headquartered in Skopje, which had not been, let's say, involved in serious allegations. And this is basically almost the end of the parabola of the Alpha unit.
So Alpha was set up in response to this wave of crime, and do you remember what time, what point in time
it was? A decree of the Minister of Interior Mihailovski. We are speaking about SDSM Dewey government, so it is, and it was, I think it was like March, April 2004, I think.
And what was the, when the unit was set up, was it in terms of ethnic composition, was it predominantly?
No, there. Let's say the ethnic composition was from the very beginning respected. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, we have never detected any kind of, let's say, problems within the police among ethnic Albanians or ethnic Macedonians or any other ethnicity. And plus, you know, let's say in a unit such as Alpha, where you have an additional allowance, you have better food, better equipment, you work in plain clothes, basically first time in the history of Police Macedonia, so it is more Western-oriented way. You have availability of cars. It is mostly young people selected and trained specifically, there is high degree of motivation. Usually there are no problems from this point of view.
And so when there were these allegations of political involvement by the Alpha Group in the Tetovo area, which political party were they supposedly acting in favor of?
Of a DPA.
Okay, so it was an Albanian, yes. Albanian party they were acting in favor. Well, there's a lot of interesting things that come up there in terms of the rapid deployment unit, special task unit. These were, as I understand it, the crisis here in Macedonia, police special units were heavily involved in most of the actions there. So what was the approach to was there approach to retraining? Was there a need for retraining? Was there a need for, you know, a public image program? What was the approach to dealing with this legacy of nearly military-style operations on the part of these police units? Yeah.
I fully agree with you, and it is, let's say, I think, confirmed by history that in the country, crisis, let's say, erupted with the misuse or non-proper use of special units targeting a criminal issue. So, let's say, deficiencies in planning, intelligence gathering, execution, use of force, liaising sometimes with the Department of Prosecutor afterwards. All these things, let's say, were part of, let's say, the problems during the crisis when the special units were, let's say, intervening in a in a certain well-defined situation. So when immediately after the crisis, special attention was put immediately in, let's say, restructuring the special units. So there was, let's say, it was paid attention to the selection process, the training process, the international cooperation activity, because let's say the more you know your neighbors and also member states' special units, the more you understand that there is a standard in which you are requested to work. So there were also visits to the Serbian police special units, to the Greek ones, to a certain extent, I don't remember, maybe. Plus, let's say, there was, trainers, specific trainers from France, from bilateral projects from UK targeting special units. And plus, Proxima had, in the first year and in the second year, two and then three experts coming from member states and dealing with special units, headquartered in Gorje Petrov with the special unit. So, being trained with them, showing a new, contemporary method of training, selection, types of weapons. At the same time, these EU experts from Proxima and from the two member states having bilateral projects were requested by the European Agency for Reconstruction to give, insight and knowledge for the buying of totally new equipment for the police. For the special units. So the special units were among the first ones to be fully re-equipped.
Now, do you recall any of the specific knowledge gaps or skill gaps that these trainers encountered when they first started working with these groups? What were the priorities that needed to be worked on?
Along with, the approach in these cases is, by default, a multifaceted one. Mm. Because at the same time you have to pay attention to the selection, because you need to select people with, the requirements you would like to have to train good candidates. Then you need to set up a new curricula for training, or to amend the curricula for training. I would say you need to demilitarize the minds of people, because usually special units are anywhere in the world a bit closer to the military mentality, because they live in the barracks, they do this specific training. But nonetheless, there is a need to instigate a civilian approach in the special units.
How does one even attempt to do that?
No, it has been done. For instance, at the very beginning, the rapid deployment unit was, working usually with typical military camouflage fatigue. Mm-hmm. And we made the point jointly, also, with embassies, unless there was a specific operation in the countryside where we don't have anything to object if it is for the safety of the personnel, but usually in urban environment or for normal training issues, we advised the local authorities to have the typical blue uniform, and so they did after I think a couple of years, but they did it. It was a budgetary issue, and the same for the color of the cars.
Now, one thing that would be interesting, given these units or these types of units' involvement in the crisis, was there any targeted program that you're aware of to increase Albanian representation specifically in these special units?
For the rapid deployment unit, which is crowd control unit, and now we are. I do not think that there has been ever a problem with ethnic representation. We don't have it now. I do not remember any kind of, let's say, complaints from, let's say, ethnic Albanians about the ethnic composition of the unit. Mm-hmm. More problematic has been the special task unit, where the minority ethnic representation has been always very low. And we have made, also in the progress report, we have made several times, let's say, the point that there is a need to have a more, let's say, mixed composition of the special task unit. But, let's say, when we are confronted with the issue that though internal vacancies were issued, but no application was available, or let's say the applications were so few, yeah, that didn't allow for a proper selection, it is difficult to continue pushing. But for instance, for the Kondovo police operation, where one of the criminals was wounded and two arrested, there was the complaint. None has ever been able to confirm it or not, that the police, according to the standards, before entering the house where the people was lying, mm-hmm, made the usual warning, police ends up this and that only in Macedonian, while the people were Albanians, and they claimed that they were not able to understand, which is, let's say, something difficult to believe, because the age of the people was conducive to think that they knew Macedonian language. Anyway, it is something to be considered, because from a human rights point of view, you need to be warned in a language where you can understand. And if here there is a minority which is 20% strong, 25% strong, by default, in a unit like this one, carrying out a specific high-risk tasks, it is recommendable to have somebody,
So is that, but that's not a general requirement. A Macedonian police officer, by definition, does not need to be able to communicate basically in Albanian?
No. Okay. No, it is not foreseen anywhere.
And then obviously the former crisis areas are very much border areas as well.
Yes.
So I imagine there was this debate over, who would take responsibility for the border. If it's a Ministry of Defense responsibility, mm-hmm, that's a very touchy, sensitive subject.
Yes.
Deploying military forces in those areas. Could you talk a little bit about how that was worked out? Maybe how the Ministry of Interior...
Yeah. along with police reform strategy was developed, the police reform strategy document was endorsed by the government. The first, draft was endorsed by the government in 2003 and then amended in 2004. But along with this police reform strategy, integrated border management strategy document was created, and this was instigated again by the European Commission, because the integrated border management concept is a European Commission concept which calls for an integrated approach at the frontier, but calls also for a civilian management of the border, not military one. So in 2005, the takeover from the Ministry of Defense to the Ministry of Interior of all the borders was completed. Started, let's say, I think like 1 year before, I don't remember, handing over the responsibility from Ministry of Defense to the Ministry of Interior at the Greek border, and then following the anti-clockwise system, ended with the Albanian border in September 2005. Along with this process, some staff from the Ministry of Defense who used to patrol the green border was transferred to the Ministry of Ministry of Interior, and this had to was, let's say, initially retrained with a crash course, and then retrained again and again and again until now, because the European Commission requested this retraining. So let's say for the process of handing over the responsibility of the border from MOD to MOI, no problems.
No problems. Now, one thing that comes to mind, when you do redeploy the joint patrols to the crisis areas, obviously some of the joint patrol are ethnic Macedonians.
Yes.
And the local community has, at that point, a pretty negative view of a Macedonian-dominated police force. Do you have any recollection of how the Macedonian members of these joint patrols were selected, or...?
I do not know, because this was an overall, let's say, activity carried out by OSCE. But I do remember that OSCE was, let's say, preparing the ground in advance, so speaking with the local authority, local communities, explaining, then starting the local patrols with OSCE presence, and then accompanying them. And this process was in parallel with the selection and the training of the new ethnic Albanian cadets, who were later immediately deployed in the former cadets area. I don't remember any kind of, let's say, big issue in this regard. Probably it was a personal one for some police officers, a bit, let's say, concerned about, let's say, coming back to some villages. But I do not remember, let's say, at the Ministry of Interior speaking with, let's say, ethnic Albanian police officers at high level, middle level, any kind of concerns.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing after the conflict, there was this idea of a force, or a portion of the force, was being rebuilt, restaffed, bringing Albanians in especially. But also there was this idea of what would be the fate of ethnic Macedonians who had been involved in groups such as the Lions, mm-hmm. that we noticed. Could you talk a bit about your experience and awareness of that process, what the debate was over the appropriate place for these people who had been involved in the conflict and may want to enter into the police force afterwards?
Yeah, in the issue of the staffing level of the Ministry of Interior has been, let's say, always present in the mind of the European Union. Let's say less from in the mind of in the thoughts of Proxima or whatever, because it was not, let's say, an emerging issue. Anyway. Let's say, judging from the data provided by the Ministry of Interior, you can see that from immediately before the conflict, the staffing level was not very high. Then rose quite dramatically in a couple of years, and reached, I think, the peak like in 2001 or so, with, I don't know, I think 12,000, 13,000, whatever. Now we stand more or less at 10,000, depending how you judge the staffing level, whether you include all the civilians of the cabinet of the Ministry of Interior or so. But let's say we are speaking about some more or less official statistics, more or less 8,500 police officers plus rest of the people belonging to the Bureau for Counterintelligence and the cabinet. And they are still, let's say, from a normal policing point of view and the taking into consideration the normal ratio we have in Europe, which is one police officer more or less every 300 citizens, they are still overstaffed. This issue was also the result of the fact that during the crisis there were some paramilitary groups. Lions, especially, let's say, coming from Prilep, Ohrid, Bitola, that area. And as it happens always after, let's say, a crisis, let's say, some of them were incorporated in the police, others not. But also in Tetovo, I do remember that some people belonging to the reservists, ethnic Albanians, and now this reminds me another thing which is linked with the deployment of the people. Immediately after the crisis, some ethnic Albanian police officers belonging to the reserve of the police, which was not activated during the crisis, were activated immediately after to, let's say, address the first immediate needs of policing in the former crisis area. Mm-hmm. And they have been, let's say, extended the contract for 1 or 2 years. In 2004, they started being, let's say, phased down, scaled down, and sent back to the reserve with no money compensation. And they made 2 or 3 roadblocks in Tetovo, I remember, that we, with Proxima, we were monitoring it. But with no big issues. And Lions, the same, made one manifestation in front of the Ministry of Interior, like in 2004. But this kind of, let's say, fringe, let's say, components of a police force in the immediate aftermath of a crisis are, I would say, quite normal. And the management of the Ministry of Interior in this regard has been, let's say, quite, let's say, reasonable. No big, let's say, problems from this kind of...
Has anything been offered to these, either the Albanian reservists or the Macedonian paramilitaries?
I do remember that some of the Lions were incorporated, offered, and then some accepted to be taken in the police. For the ethnic Albanian reservists, honestly, I do not know, but I think, I'm not sure, that after the expiry of their, let's say, contract under the reservist framework, were just, let's say, sent back.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of the process of which members of the Lions were allowed into the...
No.
Okay. No. And in terms of individuals who may have actually taken part in the conflict on the Albanian side, yeah. Was there ever any program or any debate over that as to whether how they might be incorporated into the police?
I think that some of the leading, let's say, figures of, let's say, of the former combatants in the Albanian side didn't have any need to be incorporated in the police because I entered directly into politics and joined, let's say, some important positions at political level in the government, in the municipalities.
Now, those Albanians who were brought into the police force in this bid to raise Albanian representation, were they deployed only in ethnic Albanian majority areas, or were
yes.
they deployed elsewhere?
No. If we speak about the let's say the first deployment of ethnic Albanian cadets, police officers, mm-hmm. they were deployed only in the former crisis area.
Okay. And today, what's their deployment pattern look like?
Today, let's say, if we speak about Tetovo, the 50% of the staff of the police is ethnic Albanian.
Mm-hmm. And say somewhere like Prilep, predominantly Macedonian.
There are some ethnic Albanian police officers because there is also a small presence of ethnic Albanians. But wherever the normal policy is to have a, let's say, multi-ethnic presence of the police wherever there is a multi-ethnic environment. So it is the same for the Roma police, for the police officers with a Roma ethnicity are present where there is a Roma community. And this makes sense from many points of view.
Now, when they first were looking to scale up Albanian representation, I imagine one challenge is reconciling the need to raise numbers with the need to keep a professional qualified force in place. Can you talk about how that was managed? Do you know if there were tests or educational requirements that were applied to these Albanians? Recruits were Albanian candidates suggested by their community and put forward? Or
the first, let's say, influx of ethnic Albanian police officers, maybe there were 1,000 or 500, I don't remember, to be immediately deployed in the former Casis area were, let's say, selected quite, let's say, rapidly with the help of OSCE, for sure, and I don't know if other, let's say, international organizations. Immediately, there was, let's say, the understanding that the old Idrizovo Police Academy had to be, let's say, re-established, new curricula developed, and OSCE took the lead there, as well as the European Union funded, with the European Agency for Reconstruction, funded some projects to rehabilitate the structure. Then, over the years, we had also a project that lasting 2 years to help the police academy to draft new curricula in line with, let's say, best European standards. So, but to go back to your question, let's say, about selection procedure, I have no idea, honestly.
And then, so, I imagine even today, there must be this challenge of raising Albanian representation, especially at the managerial level,
yes,
and finding people who are qualified or have experience to meet that. Could you talk about maybe some of those human resource issues that the Macedonian police force is confronting?
Yeah, the issue of let's say the ethnic representation in the Ministry of Interior is let's say, according to accepted standards from quantitative point of view. Mm-hmm. From qualitative point of view, there are still some, let's say, gaps which should be, let's say, covered in the nearest future. We are speaking about let's say managerial positions, with the exception of some areas like the regional commander in Peto, who is ethnic Albanian. Let's say it is one of the 8 regional commanders, and some positions in the Ministry of Interior, the presence of ethnic Albanians at mid to high level managerial positions is still, let's say, under the standards. This is due to some factors, let's say. First of all, there is a legal issue, which is the law on police sets the organizational, the organization of the units of the police, and the requirements to cover the leading positions in terms of years of active service and requirements, let's say educational background, and blah, blah, blah. What happens? From one side, there was a need to set some requirements according to, let's say, best international standards. So to cover the position of station commander, let's say, you can imagine that more or less 5 years of experience in the police plus some educational background is needed. So this was clear from the very beginning that to have a professional police, you needed to have some entry requirements in line with a normal standard. On the other hand, there has been always the understanding that if you are an ethnic Albanian police officer who has entered with the first wave of cadets in 2001 with the crash course of 3 months, in 2005 when there was the first massive process of covering the positions at the Ministry of Interior Central Police Services, of course you don't have the requirements. So by default, you stay out of leading positions. So you have this, conflicting needs. On one side, professionalism, which calls for clear requirements. On the other side, representation, which calls for, having maybe a transitional period of time. Mm-hmm. Among the two, needs, what won was professionalism. So let's say to sacrifice for the moment a bit of the representation in mid to high level position of ethnic Albanians for a professionalism. I think that there is the hope that with the massive training carried out by...
Sorry, so we were talking about professionalism.
No, we do hope that in the nearest future, let's say, the more and more ethnic Albanian police officers will meet the requirements set in the law on police and will be more and more considered for, let's say, positions. Mm-hmm. We will see, let's say, what will happen in the future.
So if the decision has come down on the side of professionalism, that would seem to imply that the police force does have standardized job descriptions,
yes,
job requirements,
yes,
publicly,
yes,
accessible, and those are being met.
They're
being met. These positions,
yes,
are,
yes,
being,
yes, because
based,
okay,
on
the police reform strategy called for let's say many different things: law and police, adoption of let's say in all the organizational units to have the so-called systematization act, mm-hmm, of the Minister of Interior, which is the authorized staffing level for each organizational unit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is the breakdown, and for each position, job descriptions have been developed. Back to 2005, the international community, I remember, there was a German project funded by European Union, but also European Commission, US Embassy, OSCE. We monitored from the very beginning the selection process of station commanders, regional commanders, also the standardized set of questions, how the selection process was set up, the board of the selection.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, let's say, always a monitoring of the overall process.
It is interesting, though, because all these changes were not put in place in order to reform the police. They were put in place to solve a political problem. That was the initial impetus. So looking at it from that point of view, one would think that if the initial goal was a political problem, then one would expect that political parties must also be pretty involved in this process. One would think that if it is to really satisfy Albanian political grievances, that Albanian political parties may take, one could say, a close interest in their suggestions as to who should be in these positions. Has that been a challenge here in Macedonia?
No, honestly, I've always let's say noticed, at least at my level, mm-hmm, a good let's say understanding from any party that a professional police service would be, let's say, really guarantee of let's say neutrality. So of course there has been, let's say, cases of politicization. There is still an issue of a politicization of the police, which will be addressed with an upcoming law, mm-hmm, which is debated as we speak, yeah, in the parliament. But on the other hand, let's say there is a growing understanding, both also in the within the police service, and that police must be really neutral. And let's say for a while, this is like a small mantra repeated for the use of the international community. But then it enters in the mind of people, and if you look, let's say at the mid management level of the Ministry of Interior at countrywide, it is a relatively young one. So let's say most of the people with let's say police background dating back to former Yugoslavia times with the communist let's say background are either let's say out of the police service or let's say in non-leading positions. And now there is I would say almost a new generation of mid-level managers,
mm-hmm,
who have between 10 and 20, 25 years of active service. And there is the understanding in this regard. From the side of the political party, one of the lessons learned was also from the political elections last year, that if you try to politicize the police, this might go back against you. Because then, let's say, there was the issue was so big, so the use of some fringe units of the police for political purposes, that came back, say, as a against a political party.
Now I know we have to end at some point, unfortunately. But I was wanting to wrap up. Is there something, when you look back at your experience here in Macedonia, that stands out as a real success, a tactic or a project that really did work well here? Or alternatively, is there something that, looking at things now with the benefit of hindsight, you would have done differently, maybe?
So you mean what went well and what went wrong?
More or less. A highlight either way would be great. If a lesson learned, good or bad.
I think that what really counts is really good planning from the outset, mm-hmm. of let's say the, not a mission, from the interest on a specific country, mm-hmm. and the planning must address, let's say, emerging needs, let's say encompassing them into a big view, mm-hmm. because let's say different actors playing different games, not necessarily, let's say, against each other, doesn't bring to a good outcome. Usually they lead to an outcome very expensive, mm-hmm. and not very much, let's say, useful in terms of sustainability. So from my point of view, what really counts is good planning and pragmatic planning, which calls for, let's say, people already deployed there with, let's say, in-depth knowledge of the local situation, to, let's say, strengthen the planning. And with the planning must be, as usual, a political commitment, which calls also for budgetary sustainability of the commitment, and also, which is usually very much underestimated, is for people with the capacity and the willingness to stay for, I would say, at least 3 years. Mm-hmm. Because when you see people coming like 6 months, unless they are targeting very much, let's say, specific issues, such as setting up a secure link with Interpol, which is okay, but if we are speaking about normal advisors, there is a need for at least 3 years, because really the first 6 months, it is just the first year you start understanding, and then most of the people leave.
Yeah.
And then the local authorities repeat always what is true. It is, let's say, but you know, your previous colleague told us like this, now you are telling us like that. So what is what? Because you are German, I'm Italian. What?
Yeah.
So there must be also this. This. From another point of view, I think specifically referring to this country, that probably what should have been let's say done was better was the. Yes, back the selection of the personnel to be deployed,
mm-hmm.
to avoid the conflicting messages.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Giorgio, for taking the time.
I hope that, let's say, I mostly addressed your needs.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.